Excuse me. Hey, boys. Yeah, you. Got something to say? Share it with the whole class.
Welcome to the Back of the Class, a guide to education from the kids at the back of the class. Thanks for those people who have followed us so far. We can be found on iTunes by searching for the Back of the Class. We can be reached via email at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com. That's all one word, the back of the class. Quick rundown of the structure of our show. Each week, one of us brings in an educational resource into the discussion, some more timely than others. We'll spend about 20 minutes discussing it, and then we'll have a spitballing session where the two people who didn't bring in the material get to really lay into the person who did. I am Patrick O'Shea. I'm an assistant professor of instructional technology at Appalachian State University. With me today, as always, is Daniel Curry Corcoran, a jack of all trades. I'm not even going to give his title. He can give it if he'd like.
And that'll work.
And Simon Richmond, technology associate at EDC. What does EDC stand for, Simon?
The Education Development Center.
Okay.
So I get no title, Simon gets title.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Let's go forward.
Some of us have to earn our titles.
No problem.
So last week we talked about Danny bringing in the article that would solve all of education's ills, but he slacked off and didn't. So I'm going to bring in the topic for today. And
I did slack. I must admit that I did slack. Primarily because, given my title, I'm busier than most. But anyway.
Sure. Okay. So today what we're going to talk about is a YouTube clip called The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us by RSA Animate. If you've not heard about RSA Animate, they've got a whole bunch of videos on YouTube. But the one of them that I really like is this one. And it's primarily, these are aimed at business audiences because they talk about business issues. But oftentimes they have interesting meaning for education. For instance, in this RSA Animate one, it talks about the issue of rewards and what kind of things motivate people to do their best work and what impact those kinds of rewards have on their ability to do that work. So, for instance, they talk about how monetary rewards don't often work the way we expect them to, because as soon as you get past kind of the simple manual labor kinds of things and into more cognitive skills, it puts pressure onto you to earn that extra money, and that has a detrimental effect on you. But at the end, it actually
had a negative effect, right? The rewards produce worse results.
Right. Yeah. But it more importantly, it goes into talk about what does work, because, you know, even though there is some discussion recently about paying for grades and those kinds of things, I think it's more appropriate to look at what does work to motivate people and to engage them. And in this, it talks about autonomy, mastery, and purpose. If you have those three things, then you can motivate people. So at this point, I mean, I've got a couple of other kind of quotes from this, but I think they'll come up during our discussion. At this point, I'd just kind of like to open it up to Daniel and Simon and ask what they thought and what does this video mean for education?
I can go first. I'll kick it off. I mean, one of the things that we've been dealing with here, and especially in public education, is, you know, the economy has not really been a vehicle where we've been able to offer a lot of teachers raises in the past few years. So we've been really trying to contemplate other ways of getting people excited about coming to work and doing the best, because, you know, the kids are still coming in every day. So we've been really, I had seen this video that you had sent around. We have an advanced leadership session where we had went through and looked at this about, you know, giving, you know, finding a more intrinsic motivator to get faculty to want to come in and want to do well when money's not available. But I think one of the things we've seen is that supplying people with more money or giving them a supplement doesn't do a lot to really raise performance, because when we give a supplement, I mean, really what we're looking for to do is to really change the way we do business. And I think that gets to the heart of the video, the idea of we can reward people for doing, you know, the rewards work when it's simple, methodical, things that you produce. But when you talk about aspects of getting people to be better leaders or to think outside the box, the supplement, I think at least in education, hasn't opened that door yet.
What do you think, Simon?
I really enjoyed the video. Yeah, and the animation going along with it is an interesting way to read and think about what is being presented. So thumbs up on a new format. It raised a lot of more questions for me than it answered. It certainly did touch on some interesting points, how rewards work for mechanical tasks but not for creative tasks. But I wanted to know why. I mean, why does reward work for a mechanical task but not a creative task?
See, I think that there's a cognitive a pressure that people put on themselves to achieve high-level stuff, and that if you're told, yes, you can earn the equivalent of 2 months' salary by doing this better, then you put pressure on yourself to do better, and that pressure leads you to do worse. I think that's kind of what the research that they're citing would say. Now, I've not read any of that original research, so I don't know exactly, but that sounds like
so
it makes sense.
So wait a minute, are you just theorizing and making it up?
No. I'm theorizing here.
The guy,
I blacked out for a minute. Patrick theorizing. I'm not used to this, so it took me a second to come back.
Wait a minute. The guy who's doing a high order thinking task, and he's doing it for like 2 weeks' pay, he doesn't put himself under as much pressure as the same guy who's doing it for 2 months' pay. Therefore, he does better. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's probably the way
the
it
stakes,
would work.
The stakes are too high, and the guy, for 2 months, he just crumbles.
Yeah, well, no, he doesn't work for 2 months, but if he's told that working for 15 minutes to get a high-end result will pay you 2 months' work, then that's going to put a lot of pressure on you for that 15 minutes.
Meanwhile, a mechanical task, like throwing a ball through a hoop, you don't cave in the same way from mental pressure. It doesn't shut down your mechanical abilities like it may shut down your higher-order thinking abilities.
We're
you guys are deep. You guys are so deep.
Here's
I'm just trying to understand this thing because it didn't make any sense to me. It's totally non-intuitive.
Well, that's part of the video. It talks about
one of the things
intuitive.
I took away from it, if I may interject this enlightened conversation.
Do we have a choice?
No, not at all. I'm going to talk anyway. One of the things that I really took away from it, and I kind of related it to the whole idea of, you know, Bloom's taxonomy, and I know Bloom's taxonomy has kind of been rewritten and prettied up a little bit, but the whole idea of it's kind of like, you know, those easy skills, the mechanical skills, are more like recalling facts. You know, I mean, I think there are things that can be trained. I think you can do them. I think you can even do them faster or do them better if you're given a reward, because they're very, you know, you can learn these things. They're, I don't want to say rudimentary, but they're mechanical. I think when you get to some of the higher level thinking or thinking outside the box or how are we going to get around these hurdles, I think that's more analytical. It's more synthesizing information. In terms of education, I'm not sure if we're there. I mean, even if you look at the way we test kids, multiple choice tests, you know, recall of facts, I think when you provide people with a supplement to do things like analytical thinking skills, they're not trained appropriately, so they can't arise to the occasion. We're essentially giving them money so that they can reproduce this, but it's not the same type of a process as getting something done. It's actually contemplating, strategizing, and that's why I think the stress breaks it down. They're not trained to do that type of an activity.
See, I think that this is kind of the big takeaway for me in this whole video discussion is, if you look at the reason that people get into education in the first place, it's not money. Money is very low on the list of motivating factors for people who get into teaching. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I mean, that's a different discussion to have. But as of right now, that's the state of affairs. So why would we think that giving them more money would be the way to motivate them? It doesn't make any intrinsic sense to me.
What we should go into.
Yeah, what we should do is we should give them the thing. We should give them more of the things that do motivate them. Things like autonomy, the ability to master their craft.
How are you going to give a teacher more autonomy? How are you going to give a teacher more autonomy? In other podcasts, we've been complaining that they're too autonomous.
No, you give them more autonomy.
Well, I think it speaks to the training we actually do provide teachers and the training that teachers need.
Yeah,
I mean, do we need to train teachers on how to sit kids in a class, or do we need to get teachers thinking about, are there new ways of delivering your craft?
Well,
different skill.
Simon, you ask a great question, because this gets to the kind
of
new...
No, it's not that good.
No, it was great.
And it was...
God, you guys are loving each other. I can feel the love.
Well, it's overflowing from last week.
Wow.
But the reason I say that this is a great question, because it feeds right into the natural new format of our show, talking about solutions to these issues, not just bitching about them ad infinitum.
Yeah.
And so here's the thing. If we want to...
Simon understand that we're not going to spend 30 minutes bitching about things? Because that's usually where he ends.
That happens after the record is, stop the record.
That's spitball.
Yeah.
I actually wish we could really throw spitballs at each other. That'd be a lot of fun. Like with a straw and just it's
Let's get a spitball sound effect. We can do a sound effect of a splat.
Excellent. Can you get Van? You're working on that for us, please.
How about we get a, someone, like a producer. How about a producer for our show first?
I thought you were the producer.
A fully autonomous and motivated producer.
Let me reel you guys back in here a second and actually answer the question that Simon asked. How do we give them more autonomy? They give examples in the video of how structures do that. Google has a policy in place that allows every employee to work 20% of their time on projects that are unaffiliated with their stuff. All right? We could do similar things. We already give teachers planning time and the early release days and no students in school days. All of those things we give. But then we structure their time during that time so tightly and give them meaningless one-off kind of training sessions. I would argue that it would be better just to go with the kind of quote from
one of my quotes?
No. There was a company in there called Elysium or something. I don't remember what it was. It says,
Atlassian.
It says, for the next 24 hours, you can work on whatever you want with whomever you want. All we ask is that you show us the result at the end of the 24 hours.
That's right, yeah.
You do that same kind of thing. Yeah, you do that same kind of thing. I mean, the most important quote in that whole show, that whole video for me, was where it says, if you want engagement, self-directed is better. Everything comes down to that. So we should be looking for structures to allow self-directed, both in teaching and in learning. Oh, feel free to take that call. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I want to put it on hold. Shut up.
What did she do?
I'm back.
We
have a lot of technology around the office.
We got a sense of a little bit of that, a little bit of your whole music. That's great.
I'll put you excellent. Good.
Yeah. If that's how long it takes calls.
Yeah.
That's how long it takes you to answer calls, Daniel. I want your job.
You're very efficient.
Thank you. Hey, I want to say something real quick. I think sometimes from some of the discussions I'm in, I think we sometimes treat teachers, and I don't want to say Simon's going that way because I'm not spitballing in today, but the idea of can we do that or could teachers do that, and I don't think Simon was actually saying that, but I think a lot of times we treat teachers sometimes as they treat students, and I don't mean that in a negative as it sounded, but we have an initiative to actually roll out online testing, K-12. Through 12, grade 3 through end of course testing. And one of the things we continually hear from a lot of teachers is students aren't ready, students aren't ready, students aren't ready. But when we actually get out there and set it up, the students do fine. They do better than they do on paper and pencil because, I think sometimes we put the fears that we have and say, oh, I can't do it, therefore my kids can't do it. I think sometimes a lot of principals and maybe, other administrators are worried that teachers aren't going to be able to work in this fashion. But we never give them the actual space and freedom to have 25 minutes to do whatever you want. Just show us your product. I thought that was a great idea.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, there's a problem here about the stakes that we put on education. And so, you know, education is built up to be this huge task that's so important to everybody, so you can't possibly waste a minute. And, you know, to a certain extent, that's true. But it's only true if you think of time spent gazing out the window as a waste. Downtime helps process information.
It depends what you're looking at out the window, of course.
I don't know what's outside your window. But
cell bars.
That actually wouldn't surprise me. That's the thing. If you give some time to do some little time waster activities, then that downtime allows people to process things subconsciously, draw connections, those kinds of things. That they wouldn't do if they're just all the time going through and go, 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 go. I can't waste a minute.
Yeah, no, I certainly feel like my best work is done after I wasted half a morning.
That assumes you do good work.
But I need, if you give me a task, I spend a lot of time fretting about it, thinking about it, and not doing it before I actually sit down to do it. And then when I do it, it comes out a lot more easily.
You said doo-doo.
Yeah, your strong suit has never been getting anything done. That's true.
But I want to come back to this question of teacher pay, because he kind of skated over it. He basically said, it doesn't matter what you pay people if they're doing cognitive tasks, as long as you're paying them enough money that they're not worrying about money. He makes that point. As soon as people are financially satisfied, they may not be the richest people in the world, but as soon as they're satisfied, money is no longer a motivating factor. And that's interesting because it relates back to other studies that I've read about happiness and how money can buy happiness as long as it's lifting you out of poverty. But as soon as your day-to-day needs are met, money stops making you happy. So that was interesting, but it still raises the question, are the teachers that we're paying today, and there's different wages for different places, but is that enough in most places to meet people's needs? Because there's a lot of teachers out there who take second jobs in the summer. Yeah. So,
well, for me, it wasn't a teacher pay issue, because I don't think we pay teachers enough, but we have to pay teachers more so that we can actually get the cream of the crop in colleges who want to go into teaching, and not, I can't go into teaching because it doesn't pay enough, therefore you're left with not the top of the class who want to go into that field. So we need to boost salaries so that we get the right people who might normally go be an engineer to be going to be a science teacher. I thought it was more about the supplementing teachers to do different type of work, doing that cognitive work when they haven't had the time to, like, have free time to actually think abstractly or work on a project. That's the problem. That's what the supplement problem comes in.
See, I have two comments about that. First, it's a very slippery slope to talk about setting, you know, teaching up as a competitive monetary field against something like engineering or whatever. Well, you know, we have to be realistic as well. Where is the money going to come from for that? I'm perfectly fine giving teachers more money. I think that teachers, yeah, it's nice to be paid a little bit more money. That's great, no problem. But we only want to go to the point where we're attracting the best and the brightest, sure. But we're never going to be able to compete with financial sector where people can make bonuses of $100 million or whatever. No, we'll never be able to compete with that. If we set that goal...
Would you be willing to pay more taxes if it meant your kids might have a teacher who made a different decision because money wasn't an issue?
But this isn't a question about me. It's a question about us. Would we be willing to pay a little bit more taxes? The tone of our country right now shows that we're not. I'm sorry.
If people could earmark their taxes, then they would do it. But I just don't want my taxes going to Phoenix missiles.
All right.
Anyway, I'm good with tax and education.
I feel like we've gone a little bit off the rails here.
It's a spitball.
Okay.
We call them spitballs now, not going off the rails. They're spitballs.
All right.
Okay, well, back on the rails, he talks about tying together profits and purpose. As long as you have a disconnect between the two and you're just in it to make money, then... Well, I don't know. There was a picture of a balloon floating off into the sky at that point. I wasn't sure what his point was. But basically, he seemed to be saying that people aren't necessarily motivated by profit. And that's obviously not true. There's lots of people out there who are very greedy, and profit is their only motivator. And you hear that all the time from Wall Street guys. Oh, we have to pay these bonuses because if we don't, the competition will steal our talent. So there are people out there who are motivated by money. And there are people who are doing very creative things, very, you know, complex things, not necessarily contributing to the social good, but those are smart guys on Wall Street.
Absolutely.
So what does that whole subculture say about this guy's scientific research?
Well, I think that, I mean, if you're looking at generalizations, I mean, yes, there are people out there that are going to be...
Yeah, was it too early for the spitball?
No, it's fine. But if you're looking for generalizations, you're going to find people who are motivated by money. But, you know, I think that I don't necessarily want someone whose sole motivation is money to be teaching my 6-year-old son or my 8-year-old son or my 10-year-old son or my 15-year-old son. I don't have that many sons.
I don't think we'd have to worry about it. That's a generalization. Is that what we're doing?
You've only got one son anyway, Patrick.
I don't think you're going to get anybody to go into teaching who doesn't want to work with kids at some level just because they're making a cool $55,000. It's not going to happen.
Well, we're sitting here saying we need to pay people more money to attract them to the business. But what happens when we start offering $100 million bonuses and all the Wall Street guys start teaching? Does that mean we're going to have better education?
I don't know if we're going to get to that point. I just want to provide teachers with enough funding so that maybe if there's the public service itch somewhere in your body that you might say, you know, I've always wanted to do this, and therefore I can actually go on vacation with my family, that, you know, I'm going to go into teaching. I don't have to. It just, we need to pay enough so that people can ask a different question. Right now I think, you know, a lot of our smarter kids are saying, you know, it's not really going to afford me the lifestyle that I want. That's all I'm saying. But I think, again, the article wasn't really... I think it was more talking about giving money to do different tasks, which is the problem. I mean, that's not where we get the bang of it. We need our teachers to teach students differently. By giving them a supplement, they're not necessarily going to be able to do that because we haven't trained them how to do that. I mean, if we're going to talk about one of the things where... I read a really interesting article, and I actually did find a great article that I could share today. Maybe we can do that next week. Maybe I'll pick next week's article. But it was an article that was released.
We've heard that
it was on
You're such a tease.
I am a tease. Well, what it talked about is this. It talked about a study that was done at Carnegie Mellon University, and it talked about what is it called? It was kind of a little group thinky, but it was the collaboration beats smarts in group problem solving. So it really talked about that collaborative groups who conversed easily with equal participation were more efficient at completing sets of given tasks and produced better results than groups dominated by individuals. I think right now a lot of our professional development and the way teachers work is very individual. They're working by themselves. We don't have a lot of a culture right now. I think we're trying to create a lot of that, especially the way we talk about data, but having collaborative groups that have time to talk and think outside the box, you're going to get better results. That's how the training is going to happen to make that work.
See, for me, the solution, that sounds great. I mean, I don't think anybody here is going to argue with me
for
that.
Thank you.
Well.
With a little love.
Yeah. If only you'd actually brought that article today, we could have discussed it.
Next week. It's next week's read.
No, here's the thing for me. I mean, the discussion we've had so far seems to have two kind of wings to it. First is the monetary wing and whether we can attract better people or better teachers to the field through that mechanism. That seems like a long-range goal. Sure. Yeah, that's pie in the sky stuff. What I'm talking about is working within the system as it is right now to improve the system right now. so that it doesn't have to get blown up, and we don't have to count on, you know, anybody's, you know, changing the tax laws so that we can earmark where our money goes to. No.
The old silver bullet.
No, you're setting up a straw man. That's what you're saying, is you're setting up a straw man that we can beat around and say, yes, if only this were the case. Well, yeah, if it were the case, it would, everybody would get a pony and rainbows would rule the world. But it doesn't work that way. All right?
I'm not saying it's not going to take a little work. Mr. Let's Flip the Switch.
No, here's the thing.
I can't make this happen. Everybody does turn it on.
I think that what we can do is we can work within the system as it is right now to give people more autonomy, to give them the ability to master the craft, to give them a purpose. People come into because people come into teaching with a purpose already. They want to make a difference in the lives of kids. By and large, that's what people come into this for. We can give them autonomy to do that, and we can give them the skills necessary for mastery. That's what we're talking about. We can give them all of those things. Now,
not if we're not going to change our accountability structure and how people are held accountable, you're not going to be able to do that. I mean, if you're going to hold principals accountable for their schools,
but what,
if the results, they are not going to, if they don't have autonomy, their teachers aren't going
to
have autonomy.
But which is more likely, to change the accountability structure or to change the tax code? Which is more likely?
I'm talking about we need to change the way teachers collaborate and work together. That could be done tomorrow. If we, you know, let's get a room of people. Get some teachers. Let's sit down. Let's collaboratively think. Let's begin to know each other. Let's sing a song or something. You know what I mean? Let's get to know each other. Collaboratively think. Let's get some stuff done.
All right.
What you're saying here is that the whole system will work better if teachers have more autonomy, more purpose, and opportunities to master their skills.
Exactly.
I would say completely the opposite.
Oh, sure, we can do.
I would say that the system, as broken as it is working, but only because teachers have a lot of autonomy. Teachers have a lot of purpose, and they do have opportunities to master their skills. I think a lot of the people who are in the teaching force are attracted to be working with kids. They want that purpose, and they enjoy the power trip that they, I mean, that sounds negative, but you know what it's like to try and teach a bunch of teachers. They don't really pay attention to you in the front of the classroom because they're so used to being there themselves.
I never have that problem.
Oh.
Maybe it's just you.
You never recognize that problem.
Of these things already. And I think they're making the system work, a system which has got deeper problems. But giving them more of these things isn't going to be the whole solution. It will improve things a little bit. But I think that what we need to be doing is finding other major obstacles to learning, and it's not just the teachers' attitudes and the work environment that we put teachers in.
See, but this isn't. I agree with you to a certain extent, but this is not only about the teachers as well. If we can provide the same kinds of things to students through structural change, the ability to give them some autonomy, you know, give them some sort of purpose. You know, what do kids come to school for? I have no idea why kids come to school. You know?
Girls. They go to school to see their friends.
Yeah. That's their purpose? No, well, come on. This whole discussion is kind of focused just on the teachers, but we can do this also for students. We can build structures that give them purpose, that allow them the ability to master their skills and content, and give them some autonomy. Kids don't have any of those things right now. Mm-hmm. Teachers might have too much of them. But
if they do have those things, it's those kids who are the best and brightest. You know, we will give them autonomy.
Yeah.
But, this child, you know, has a little bit of a behavior problem. We got to lock him down.
Right.
We can't give that student any autonomy. So we figure that by locking them up, that whole prison model of not giving them lots of options is going to make them reengage in school. And I agree with you. I mean, we need to do that. I'm not sure we have a lot of leaders out there working on it.
All right. Well, as always, Danny gets the last word.
Please no, please go. Please, Simon, please say something.
Simon, Danny, I appreciate you taking the time to meet with me. I know that Danny has to run off to a lunch meeting or something, and that's why he wasn't able to do...
No lunch, budget meeting.
Oh, budget meeting. Yes.
A budget is where we discuss finances and trends. Yes.
Good. Hey, just as an aside, I think it's, if we do have listeners out there, if you're listening to this, take a chance to look at the RSA stuff, the RSA Animate on YouTube. They have a lot of really good stuff on there. They have, you know, a really interesting one about the secret power of time and how we culturally view time and how it impacts our lives, those kinds of things. Very, very interesting. And Simon said this, the animation that's used, the whiteboard kind of animation, makes it much more engaging than just listening to this guy talk for 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
What is RSA?
I got the article for next week. I want to continue this discussion next week. Let's talk about some of these solutions. This, you know, I want to talk about this.
Well, since
working
you're
collaboratively, building more smarts.
Yeah, since you're bringing the article next week,
yeah,
then you can do that. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Simon, yeah. Danny, thank you for taking the time. I'll talk
always
to you
a pleasure,
next week.
Man.
Bye.
Good to see you, Simon.
Bye.